Mr. Tasky. The Antic Files. Episode 11.
Welcome to the 11th episode of Inversitasky, The Antic Files. I'm your host, Wade, and this episode covers Antic Issue 11, which is Volume 2, Number 5, from August 1983. The subject is graphics. It was 112 pages cover to cover, and there are 63 advertisers on board. The price was $2.50 in the US and $3 in Canada. I would give you some news, but there is no news. So no news is good news, right? The cover of this issue is all black. There is a digital cityscape at the bottom, set at night. You can see the silhouette of the building set against purple and pink clouds. At the top in hot pink is the Antic logo, which has a bright light blue shadow. In the top left, there is a diagonal yellow banner with black text that reads, Cover Contest Winners. The prices are in white in the upper right, and in the bottom left is the barcode. As far as cover art repair goes, this cover was extremely worn and required extensive healing. It was also not scanned completely. It appears about 1/4 inch off the left side was missed. There is no editorial in this issue. For this issue, I'm running a little light on ads. One that definitely stuck out to me was LJK, and it has a full-page, full-color ad for Spell Perfect. It's titled Correction, and features some children's alphabet blocks that are arranged to read Spell Perfect, with perfect spelled P-U-R-F-E-C-T. The U block is slightly pulled out from the rest to draw attention to it. The background of the page is golden yellow. At the bottom is some text about the product, notably that it can do what your second grade teacher wanted to do. Also at the bottom is a large black LJK logo. LJK Spell Perfect was featured on Inversitasky in Season 2, Episode 3, and there's a link in the show notes. The first feature in this issue is called Profiles by Tay Vaughn. This department article profiles Pat Ketchum, the founder of Datasoft. Datasoft is headquartered in Chatsworth, California, and was incorporated on June 12, 1980. At the time of writing, the company had 50 employees and 22,000 square foot footprint. In the last year, their sales growth is up 400%. Atari software makes up roughly 70% of their sales. They have 14 in-house programmers that write in assembly language. Datasoft was the first third-party software company to sell through Toys R Us and JCPenney. The next feature is called Inside Atari by Robert DeWitt. This department article is titled Alan Alda. The article discusses the naming of Alan as the new spokesperson for Atari computers for the next 5 years, and it states that Atari has provided him with all of their products. He is pictured in front of a desk full of equipment, including the elusive 1450 XLD, a 1050, a 1200 XL, or perhaps a 1400 XL, printer, TV, joystick, etc. I really wish Kay from the Antic podcast could get an interview with Alan to find out his perspective. The next feature is Starting Line by Ted Murdoch. This department article is titled Turncoat. It features a program that creates a grid of O's in graphic mode 2 in multiple colors, and each changes color independently until they are all the same color. The type-in basic programs are designed for you to modify and get acquainted with graphics mode 1 and 2. The algorithm needs some tweaking. I let it run well over an hour, and the final two colors were still battling for dominance. It offers many suggestions for modifications to help you understand the modes, and there are screenshots on the website. The next feature is called 3D Fuji by Jerry O'Neill. This feature article describes how to represent 3D objects on a 2D plane. It explains yaw, pitch, and roll, and how to calculate them. There are two basic type-ins. One draws an A in a square and plots each axis directional arrows, so you can see its orientation, then rotates it around the axes. The rotation is not fluid real-time motion. Each angle is drawn, held for a few seconds, and then the next one is drawn, rinse and repeat. The other program draws an Atari Fuji symbol with the word Atari in the bottom right and then does the same sort of rotation. There are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is cover art contest winners. This feature article shows the winning art from the contest, as well as 5 runner-ups out of 147 submissions. It also includes a short article about the winners and other entries submitted. The winning piece is featured on the issue's cover and was described earlier in this episode. It was submitted by John Brooks and is titled City of Lights, which was created with Atari Paint. For this, he received $300 as the winner. The rest are Merry-Go-Round by Frank Brand, which features a large merry-go-round with multicolor horses. This was done in BASIC using Graphics Mode 10, and the horses animated with color to appear to revolve. The entry was discarded as a potential winner, but did get second place. Next was Eye by Fred Caprilli, which is a close-up of a human eye. This was created with MicroPainter, and Fred is the only winner from outside the United States. And the next three are honorable mentions only. The first is San Francisco Bay by Cecilia Gaxiola, I hope I pronounced that correctly, which is an overhead night view of the Bay Area and large red Fuji symbol in the lower left. The symbol represents where Atari is on the map. The second is called Insomnia by Richard Slater, which features a small office bedroom scene of a balding man sitting in front of an Atari 800 computer looking at the same picture on his computer screen. There's an antique magazine on the desk, and the clock on the wall indicates it's about 4:09. Since the window shows the moon and stars, presumably this is 4:09 a.m. The third honorable mention is called Earth by Peter Wickman, which features a large blue crate-looking area, and above that part is the continent against the black sky. On either side of the continent are 2 hot air balloons, and this entry was delivered by hand within 15 minutes of the deadline and was created using Epic's Fun with Art. The next feature is Pilot Your Atari by Kathy and Phil Berg. This department article is titled Redefine Characters and starts with a rumor and introduction by Ken Harms. The rumor is that Atari Superpilot is complete and that they have been using it in the computer camps. The new version should include all the graphics modes and 4 turtles. The introduction for Phil and Kathy Berg, who are both accomplished pilot programmers, and they will be contributing to the issue each month. It's noted that they wrote the only pilot program accepted by APX. The article tells you how to redefine a character, both visually and technically, then presents 2 programs to demonstrate redefining the character set in Pilot. The first one just changes the capital L to a cursive L. The second changes 6 letters to a locomotive and animates it across the screen. When the train animates, it makes a sound that could be perceived as a choo-choo. And there are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Keystroke Artist by Alan Gellings. This feature article presents a Graphics 10 drawing program written in BASIC. The listing is quite long, just over 4 pages, double column, and there are 7 lines that look particularly troublesome to key in correctly. They define assembly code for some of the program's function and are presented in the ATASCII characters that represent the opcodes. It doesn't allow you to edit a full height screen though, and there are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Picture Utility by William Ho. This feature article presents a basic type-in program that allows you to subtly modify MicroPainter screens, primarily adding text of up to 5 sizes, starting with Graphics Mode 1. This is another very long listing if you are up for it. The author said he used plain ASCII so it could be easily transmitted, and if you send him $3 and a blank disk, he'll keep the money and the disk.
Wait, what?
Just checking if you're listening. Just kidding. He'll put it on the disk and send it back to you, saving you from typing it all in. I used the guitar image from the MicroPainter disc and added inverse Ataski to the top using two different colors. And there are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Escher Sketcher by Benjamin Bartels. This feature article presents a basic program that lets you draw MC Escher-style isometric images that, if drawn carefully, can't present an optical illusion. There are some screenshots of my poor drawing on the website. The next feature is In the Public Domain by Scott McKissick. This department article presents a basic type-in game called Maze Maniac. Surprisingly, the listing is just over one page, double columns. The article breaks the code down as well, so you can understand how it works. This game draws a giant maze across six screens and uses page flipping to move between them. You must collect six prizes as many times as possible within the time limit. It takes about 30 seconds to set up, and the screen is blank, so be patient. A timer ticks away visually and audibly, and a tone is played as you collect prizes. Here's about 20 seconds of game audio, and there are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is Games Department by Dan Guzman. This department article discusses the Atari 2600 graphics and how programmers are able to make fantastic games with such limited graphics capability. One key point is that good graphics don't necessarily make a good game. An example using Earthworld, which displays a multicolor sword when turned on, only to be an ordinary graphics for the rest of the game. It's reported that the sword took up to 2K of precious memory. On the contrasting side are games such as Pitfall, which managed to pull off both good graphics and good gameplay. The next feature is called Tape Topics by Carl Evans. This department article is titled Get Your Head Straight. The first part describes how to build a tape head alignment tool and how to use it. It's noted that if you don't move your program recorder often, it really shouldn't need to be aligned very often, if at all. The next feature is Education by Charles Moore. This department article tells you what a resistor does, what it's typically constructed of, carbon or other resistive material, and how its work output is measured. If you guess ohms, you're correct. It describes the stripes that appear on tube resistors, which are said to be the most commonly seen.
Sure, for 1983.
Right, Surface Mount is now king. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't recall seeing many tube-type resistors in electronic devices that I've opened up in the last few years. A basic program is presented here that helps you determine a resistor's ohm value based on the color stripes. It's about 5K in size. Upon seeing the screen output, I immediately recognized the program. I used it in high school electronics homework. It draws a large resistor on the screen and displays four stripes on it. You change the stripe colors with the number keys, and it computes the value and the tolerance. It makes a few sounds while working, as heard here, and there are some screenshots on the website. And the last feature for this issue is Graphics Grab Bag. This feature article is somewhat of an overview of several software items that will help you become a master at producing graphics on your Atari 8-bit. The article covers MicroPainter, Graphics Master, Graphics Composer, Paint, DrawPic, and Stereo 3D Graphics. You get many reviews of each and a nifty comparison chart of features. Starting with this episode, I've decided to break down new products into its own section as there are a number of items I find interesting each time. In the new products section, there is a mention of Trax new smart drives, that's TRAK, the ATD1 and the ATD2, but not the R2D2. They are only 3 inches high, have an onboard processor and memory, include a Centronics parallel port, and has a track readout on the front. The single density drive is $469, and the double density drive is $499. That's $1,426 and $1,517 today. You may as well spend that extra $30 for the double density drive. Next, there's another product called the Soundtrap from Trace Systems. This isn't software, it's an acoustic enclosure for your noisy printer. It has an optional stand that sets it up at an angle, and the front serves as a place to set a paper to reference, such as Antic Magazine, when you're entering in a program listing. It is $109 without the stand, or $129 with the stand, which is $331 and $392 today. And next, Questar has released the Questar 2 game controller. This is a laptop game controller sized at 12.5 inches by 8 inches, almost the size of my Ed Ladin controller. The Questar 2 has an arcade joystick and buttons, yes, two, one on either side for left or right-handed players. It has a neat graphic design on top, and it's claimed that you will be more comfortable during long play use. I can attest to that. I can only use the CX-40s for short periods of time now, and I'm not sure how I managed that back when I was a kid. There's no price listed, so give them a call at the number listed. There are some miscellaneous items I want to talk about, and the first is in the I.O. board. One reader writes in to say that the new program listings are better than before, but there's still an issue with determining proper spacing and strings. I think I've said that. Also in the I.O. board is the program listing that should have accompanied the Talk is Cheap and Conserve RAM articles in the last issue. And in this issue, it looks like the Works with 1200XL tags are now removed from the program listings. One thing I will mention in the product review section, there is a review of Tronix KidGrid, and this is likely one of the only few games I'll ever mention. This was and is one of my favorite games. I posted an ad for this to Mastodon and Blue Sky back in October of 2023. I had this on cassette, and I had to wait to load it whenever I wanted to play. It's a really fun game in my opinion, and the review here backs that claim. The review says it's a mutation of Pac-Man, but I disagree. It's more like Amidar in my opinion. Try it out if you haven't before. You'll be amazed at it. And there's a link to the game on Atari Mania in the show notes. Next, I noticed a small ad from Wiser Electronics for the single stroke cursor control. And this is designed for the 400 and 800. This is a small keyboard unit that fits above the clear and insert keys. It gives you a full cursor control without having to press control. And there's no soldering required. It's $35, which is $106.43 today. And I'd like to see what this looks like. Sadly, there's no pick. Near the back, Sierra Online has a half-page ad which tries to convince you to choose them as your software publisher. It asks several important questions that you may or may not have thought about and explains why it's important to consider, such as 1. How large is the publisher's distribution network? 2. How will your product be marketed and advertised? 3. Does the publisher market programs for more than one computer? 4. Does the publisher lend technical support to the authors? 5. Does the publisher offer complete product support to consumers? Before choosing, you should contact them for their author's packet. Howard Luthi or David Seary can help.
No relation.
I see what you did there. If you have any stories or experiences with Antic or any of the products mentioned, I'd like to hear about them. My contact info is on the Inversitaski website. If you want to be immortalized in audio, send me an audio submission. Many thanks go out to Zane Little for the track The Cool Factor from the album Another Bag of Chips, which is used in the opening sequence, and thank you for continuing to listen.